Don't worry, Punkin. I'd have cauterized the wound for you long before you bled out. And you'd probably enjoy it, too. Caleb flashed a grin. Not as much as I'd enjoy drinking your blood, but... He sobered. What really happened?
I got mugged at the Riverwalk.
He let out a low whistle. By a demon? A daemon? Couch potato?
Nick shook his head. Humans. Alan and Tyree. They didn't recognize me until after they had dropped a bead on me.
Both of Caleb's eyebrows shot north.
Are they still alive?
Alan is. Not sure about Tyree. I shot at him with Alan's gun and he ran off.
After rising from the chair, Caleb closed the distance between them and grabbed Nick's jaw in a fierce grip.
Hey!
He snapped, trying to push him back. He wouldn't loosen his hold at all. After a minute, he sighed in relief and let Nick go.
He's alive.
Yeah, okay, that was a little creepy. Nick rubbed at his now sore jaw.
How do you know?
You're still yourself. If you'd killed a human, even by accident, and especially with malice, the Malachi would be in the process of devouring all your humanity.
Nick gaped. You're just now telling me this?
It hasn't been an issue until now. But with your father weak, it wouldn't take much to convert you over.
Nick was sickened by the thought, but at least it clarified one thing that had worried him.
So... That's why my blood turned blackish in the fight.
Caleb snapped to full attention. What was that? Nick lifted his hand to show him his busted knuckles.
While we were fighting and I wanted to kill Alan, my skin changed and my blood darkened. It was really creepy and gross.
Caleb cursed under his breath.
We have a bad situation here.
How so?
He saw the hesitation in Caleb's dark eyes. After a minute, he let out a slow, tired breath.
I'm not gonna lie to you, Nick. Your father has royally screwed me, and I have no idea why I'm surprised by it. But you remember when I told you that I'd have my freedom when he dies?
Yeah.
He's bound me to his powers.
Bemused, Nick wondered why Caleb was so upset about that.
I don't understand.
Caleb returned to his chair.
When a demon is enslaved, we are tied to our master's life force. But a Malachi is a different kind of beast. Unlike others, their powers and life force are two separate living things, so a Malachi can bind a demon to his lifetime or to the life of his powers. When he does the latter...
Nick sucked his breath in sharply, as he caught up to Caleb's ire.
You will be enslaved to whatever takes over my father's powers.
Caleb touched his finger to the tip of his nose in a silent salute to Nick's correct answer.
And because he has charged me with watching over you these past few years, I know who you are and where you live and sleep.
Yeah? So?
Nick, think about it for a second.
Go that extra step, past the obvious.
If my next master bids me to bring you to him so that he can drain you too, I will have no choice but to follow his orders and hurt you. I will never again be free, and so long as I live, I am a huge threat to you. Now do you get it?
He considered Caleb's predicament a second, then came up with another alternative.
But if I take my father's powers, I can free you, right?
Caleb shook his head.
It doesn't work that way. Because of what Adarian did, I am, and will forever be, enslaved. Unless the creature holding his powers is utterly destroyed.
Even if you die first?
There was no missing the thick bitterness in Caleb's dark eyes.
You know how dark hunters turn into shades when they die and live in eternal hell and misery?
Yeah.
Caleb inclined his head.
Bingo. They're not the only ones.
Nick groaned in sympathetic pain for him.
How awful. Why would he do that to you?
What'd you do? is the Malachite, Nick. He's completely incapable of caring about anyone or anything. I'm his tool, and he did this to motivate me to find whatever is weakening him and kill it so that I won't become their property. But if you kill him while he's weak, I won't stop you from it.
He made it sound so easy, but Nick knew better.
Caleb. Caleb lifted his hand to cut his argument off. No, Nick. It's a risk for you. But either way, we're both screwed. You cannot afford for whatever is killing him to get his powers and then come after you. You won't be able to survive their attack.
Raking his hands through his hair, Nick tried his best to think of something else, but he couldn't. More than that, he kept coming back to one simple truth.
I'm not ready to be a Malachi.
Caleb laid his head down on his folded arms.
We could try to bind your father's powers as he dies, to lock them down so that they don't hit you all at once. That way we could take our time training you and expose you to them individually.
Nick was highly suspicious. Can it be done?
In theory.
He let out a high-pitched half-laugh. Theory, Caleb? Are you high? I don't like that word. What if something goes wrong?
What if it goes right?
Oh, yeah, that's helpful. Thanks, Kay. Throw some optimistic possibility into my face, why don't you? 'Cause as we both know from much experience, nothing I try ever goes wrong.
Cut the sarcasm, Gaucher.
Caleb sighed.
You're right. Everything you touch goes nuclear in ways we never foresee.
Nick nodded in agreement, but in the end, he knew that Caleb was right. If, God forbid, something else took control of Caleb's slavery. Nick nodded in agreement. But in the end, he knew that Caleb was right. If, God forbid, something else took control of Caleb's slavery, Nick wouldn't stand a chance against him. And it wasn't just that. Caleb was his friend. The demon had bled for him multiple times. There weren't many people Nick would put at his back. Caleb was about it. And he wouldn't hesitate to trust him. Ever.
All right, Kay. Let's say we try this your way. What would we have to do to bind my powers?
A light of hope shined in Caleb's dark eyes.
Don't play with me, Nick. Not about this.
Nick was aghast. You know, we are friends. At least, that's how I think of you. Do you honestly believe I would be able to live with myself if I let someone hurt you after all you've done for me? Gee, thanks for the love, Malphus. Caleb rose slowly from the chair and moved to stand in front of him. The expression on his face said that he couldn't even conceive of real friendship, that in his world, it was the most alien concept he knew.
I don't know what to say to that. I haven't had a friend since before human time began, at least not one who wouldn't hesitate to betray me to save their own skin. And with you being a Malachi.
I'm not just a Malachi, Caleb. I'm a Gaucher first and foremost, and Gauchers take care of their family, always. And until you give me reason to think otherwise, we are brothers. Caleb froze as he heard a word no one had applied to him since the day he'd buried his wife. Family. In his world, with the exception of Liliana, family had just meant they were the first to offer you up as a sacrifice for whatever selfish thing they wanted. And as he stared into Nick's sincere gaze, he realized that he considered Nick a brother too. That he would die to protect him, not because Adarian had ordered it, because he finally believed Cody was right. Nick wasn't like the others before him. He had a soul and a heart. He cared about other people. Against all odds and genetics, Nick was decent. Caleb held his hand up to him.
Brothers in arms?
Brothers in arms, Nick said, taking his hand and shaking on it. Now, what do we need to do this?
Honestly, one hell of a miracle.
Nick actually laughed at that. Hey, boy, what are you, blind? He tapped at the religious medallion he always wore around his neck. I'm Catholic. Miracles are our specialty. Caleb wished he shared Nick's optimism about that.
But as Nick had pointed out, everything they touched together blew back on them. And while he was grateful Nick was at least willing to try, there was a really good chance that they both could die while trying to bind Amalekai's powers. To his knowledge, there had never been a Malachi who was half-human. In the past, they had always bred with demons, gods, and other preternatural beings, creatures who had the strength and the stamina to withstand the weight of Amalekai's preternatural strength, at least in the beginning. But in time, one by one, they had all gone insane with it and become the worst sort of monster.
Nick, Charisse called from the kitchen. Your food's getting cold, baby.
Coming, Mom,
Nick said before he turned to face Caleb.
When do we do this?
As fast as we can. I don't know how soon that creature who's draining Adarian's power will strike. We have to kill him before they do.
Nick swallowed at those words, especially after what Ash had told him about killing someone. And they had been talking about strangers then. Would Nick really be able to execute his own father? Granted, they weren't close, but it was his dad. His doubt was swallowed by the memory of what had possessed him when he'd confronted Alan. He'd not only been capable of it, he'd been relishing Alan's pleas and cries of pain, something that truly sickened him. Conceived in violence to do violence. Afraid of the destiny he was about to willingly step into, Nick reached up to rub his mother's St. Nicholas medallion that she'd given him for confirmation. The saint he'd been named for. While most folks only knew Saint Nick as Santa Claus, Nick's mom had made sure that he well understood why she'd named him for the medieval bishop. The name itself meant victory of the people, and Saint Nicholas was the designated patron saint and guardian of children, women, innocents, and those who sought justice and refuge from storms, as well as safe passage home. May St. Nicholas hold the tiller. Through the darkest nights and most dangerous of storms, St. Nicholas guide me safely back to the light and security of my family. And he would find his way home. There was no way he'd allow his father's powers to corrupt or change him. Nick clenched the medallion in his fist.
I will not fail in this.
While he might be a Malachi, he was also a guardian. Somehow, he was going to defy the odds that condemned him, and he would save the lives of those he loved. He would. Demonic laughter filled his head.
Believe your lies, Malachi, but I will feast on your heart and use your powers to slaughter the very things you're trying to protect, starting with your mother. You don't stand.
Chapter 14.
You ready for this?
Nick jumped at the sound of Ash's voice in his room. He'd expected Caleb to be waiting for him after dinner. Instead, it was the Atlantean.
Geez, you scared the crap out of me. What are you doing here?
Ash held his hand up. There was a small piece of plastic between two fingers that he wiggled back and forth.
Didn't think you'd want to wait.
Nick frowned.
On what?
Laughing, Ash held the card out to him.
You don't play this game, right?
Nick took the plastic, then glanced down. He did a double take before he gaped at Ash.
No way!
You're a squire, Slick. We tend to pull a few strings for you guys. And there's no chance on this planet that I'm going to spend hours waiting at the DMV for you to get called and then possibly fail. I've done my time in hell. No more.
Still, Nick couldn't believe it. He held the license up to check it against the light. It looked authentic. It even had a bad picture of him in a tacky shirt.
Is this real?
Absolutely. But the one drawback is, if your mom changes her mind about you driving, it will be revoked. Until then, welcome to the world of grown-up responsibility.
Nick could shout, he was so excited.
This is so awesome, thank you!
No problem.
Ash turned, as if he was going to leave, then stopped.
By the way, you probably want to meet me outside for a few minutes.
Okay, I'll be right out. Ash vanished, while Nick went to ask his mom if he could run a couple of errands.
Don't be gone too long.
Won't, promise. Nick left her on the couch and headed down to the street. It took him a second to find Ash, who was a little ways down by a set of parked cars.
So what do you need me to do?
Nick asked. Ash handed him a set of car keys.
Just don't hurt yourself or anyone else.
Nick scowled. Ash talked in more riddles than Nashira did.
Huh?
Laughing, Ash shook his head and stepped back. He indicated the silver Jag he'd used for most of Nick's driving lessons.
It's all yours, kid. Enjoy.
No way. Nick couldn't have been more stunned had Ash pimp-slapped him. In fact, he'd have expected that over this, but there was one small problem. You know my mom won't let me accept this, right?
It's a company car for your personal use. Kirian's name is on the lease, but you're listed as the primary driver on the insurance. When you graduate, we'll sign it over to you.
Letting out a loud whoop, Nick threw himself against Ash and hugged him.
I love you, man. You're the best.
Ash clapped him on the back.
I'll see you later, kid.
He headed for Ursuline's.
Hey, Ash?
He turned to look back at Nick.
Really? Thank you.
Anytime. Just stay out of trouble.
A sick feeling settled in his stomach as he watched Ash vanish into the darkness. Stay out of trouble. That had always been his plan, but trouble kept tackling him to the ground and sitting on his chest.
Hey, what's going on?
He jumped at the sound of Caleb's voice behind him.
Ash just gave me the keys to the car he's been training me on.
He grinned like a moron.
I can drive.
It's not all it's cracked up to be.
Nick slid the keys into his pocket along with his license.
Now I get to find out, don't I?
You do indeed.
Caleb inclined his head toward the street.
You ready to do this?
Yeah, just don't kill me tonight. I got places to drive to later.
Like where?
No idea.
Caleb laughed and then led the way over to Royal Street. They stopped in front of a store with long green shutters. Caleb had assured him that this store would have everything they needed to bind Nick's powers so that they didn't overwhelm him. Ursulie's Authentic Voodoo. His first impression of it was that it looked incredibly pink and purple and extremely mainstream. Frowning, he turned his head to Caleb.
How long has this store been here?
Caleb shrugged.
It was here when I arrived in New Orleans.
How weird. So, it's been here for years.
Yeah?
Why?
I've never seen it before.
And it was less than a block from Bubba's Triple B and just down the street from his school. Not to mention it was right next door to Sean Kelly's Royal Street Deli, where he'd eaten so many times he couldn't even begin to count them all. He must have walked past this place millions of times, so how had he not known it was here? Caleb's eyes widened. That look didn't bode well.
What?
Nick asked, as a wave of trepidation filled him.
Just thinking.
Caleb skimmed the street and buildings around them.
If you've never seen this place, when it's basically on the corner of St. Anne and Royal, where we walk almost every day, something had it shielded from you.
What does that mean?
It means that this place will be important to you one day, and that something was trying to keep you away from it.
Is that a good thing or a bad one?
Nick asked.
No idea, which is what concerns me most.
Not half as much as it concerned Nick. Unlike Caleb, he had no doubt it would be something bad. That was just the way his luck ran.
Should we leave, then?
Caleb shook his head.
Can't. I have to have the right supplies for the binding, and some of the ingredients are really rare. This is the best place to get them.
He stepped past Nick and opened the door. Nick entered with a great deal of reservation, not sure what to expect of a store the universe hadn't wanted him to see. Part of him expected to burst into flames the minute he crossed the threshold. But somehow, he got inside without dying on the spot. He'd been to several voodoo stores over the years. It was hard to live in New Orleans and not go in one at some point, if for no other reason, mere curiosity.
and this one was both similar and, at the same time, very different. On his left was a large voodoo altar that encompassed the fireplace and was topped by a purple mantle. On top of the mantle was the typical warning not to touch or photograph the altar, as it was a real place of worship. Over bottles of wine, candles, beads, money, and flowers that people had left on the top shelf as offerings was a huge painting of a light-skinned woman who had a purple snake crawling up her left arm. The sign below identified her as Urzuli, the loi of love and beauty that the store was named for. Ah, now Nick fully understood the decor. That was why the store was so girly in appearance. The whole place that bore her name paid homage to her. Made sense. He turned to look around more. The wall on his right was lined with shelves of merchandise. Bottles of oil, spells, poppets, perfumes, lois, soaps, fetishes, and all other manner of ritual items. There were small round tables with more oils, soaps, and perfumes lined up in the center. The back of the store had a screen and empty table, along with two chairs for those people who wanted readings or other private voodoo services. A tall, brown-haired woman came out of the back, carrying a corrugated box of new merchandise. Beautiful and filled with grace, she was dressed in a pair of jeans and a purple sweater with bell sleeves. Her blue eyes lit up with joyful friendship as she saw them. "Caleb, it's been a while, sweetie. How are you doing?" "Hey, Anna, pretty good." He took the box from her hands and carried it to the counter so that he could place it next to her register for her to unpack. "Thank you so much for the help." Anna paused at the sight of Nick. "Can I help you?"
"He's with me." Caleb gestured between them. "Nick, meet Anna. Anna, Nick."
"Hi," Nick said quietly. There was something about her that was really familiar, but he couldn't place it. "Bashful. How cute." She turned back to Caleb. "So, what can I do for my favorite knowledge loom?"
Smiling at her teasing, he indicated the shelves with his thumb. "I need a few things. Mind if I help myself?"
"Go for it, Shug. Just let me know if you need any help."
"Will do."
Nick picked up one of the baskets by the altar and handed it to Caleb, who took it to the wall and started filling it with things Nick knew nothing about. While he was trying to learn all of this, there was just so much, and what with school. He one day expected his brain to explode from all the necessary and trivial information he was attempting to cram into it. As he looked around while he waited for Caleb, he saw a couple of photos near the register. Some were of voodoo priests and priestesses, but others were of an all-girl family, a huge all-girl family, and while he glanced over them, he caught a familiar face. Was that? He stepped closer to make sure it was who he thought, and then his jaw went slack. Yes. Yes, it was. Nick frowned at Anna.
"You know Tabitha Devereaux?"
"Of course. She's my niece."
"Really?"
He had to catch himself before he said, "But you look so normal." After all, the woman did own a voodoo store, which by its very existence knocked her out of the realm of normality. Still, owning this store was a far cry from Tabitha's special breed of scary intensity. All of a sudden, Nick felt an odd sensation run over his skin. He had no idea what it was, but it made him turn around to see a girl not much older than him coming out of the back. Her brown hair was almost the same color as Anna's, and she had a pair of big blue eyes. "We need more paper towels," she said to Anna. She straightened her top and then slowed her approach as she realized the two of them weren't alone in the store. She looked at Anna curiously. Anna jerked her chin toward him. "His name's Nick. He knows Tabby. Do you two know each other?" The girl shook her head before pinning a suspicious glare on Nick. She had a gleam in her eyes that said she was trying to decide what category to put him in. Scary, insane, or friendly.
"Are you one of Tabby's zoo crew?"
Nick had no idea what she meant by that.
"Zoo crew? The insane lunatics she runs around with at night looking for vampires to stake?"
She shook her head at Anna. "I don't know where she gets that from."
Because she definitely couldn't get it from the voodoo side of the family.
But Nick refrained from stating the obvious and having her hex him for it.
"No, I'm not a zoo crew loon."
That appeased her.
"Ah, good. I'm her older sister, Tiana, by the way. Nice meeting you.
Yeah, you too.
Sort of. Though, to be honest, he was beginning to think their entire family tree was deeply rooted in the lush swamp of weird, idiosyncratic, and insane.
Hey, Anna,
Caleb asked, intruding on a conversation that had been going nowhere. Do you have some unused blackberry, thistle, and papoose root in the back?
Of course. Do you need valerian, too?
No, thanks. We're trying to bind evil, not invite it to our party.
Glad to hear that. Last kid we had in here? Let's just say people who don't understand the powers they're courting should play Parcheesi in their spare time.
I couldn't agree more.
Caleb dropped another small container in his basket.
I also need at least 10 ounces of your 7 African Powers oil and a huge vat of black salt.
She exchanged a wide-eyed stare with Tiana that said Caleb's order was excessive.
What are you into, boy?
Oh, yeah. There was no missing the castigation in her tone or question.
Not at liberty to say, but don't worry. I really do know what I'm doing.
I hope so, see, because I don't want to have to go rescue you from something that requires that much binding.
She let out a low whistle before she looked back at Tiana.
And if you ever mess with something like this, both your mother and I will get you.
Tiana rolled her eyes.
I'm not Tabitha or her twin or the psycho named Karma. Please don't confuse us.
Laughing, Anna headed to the back to get what Caleb needed. Nick froze as he reached the end of the high counter and saw a large crystal ball unattended. It pulled him toward it with a lure he couldn't resist. The one power he had that worked best was scrying, and any time he saw something that reflective, he had to look into it. He placed his hand on the back of the cool surface to help direct the light. There, in the center of the ball, he saw an image of a slightly older Tiana having dinner with Ambrose inside a really nice restaurant. No, not Ambrose. Him. They were laughing and talking in such a way that he knew they were good friends, or maybe even something more. Was that why the store had been shielded from him?
Do you go to school with my sisters?
Tiana asked as she started pricing the items in the box Caleb had carried for her aunt. It took him a second to break contact with the ball and understand her question.
No, I go to St. Richard's.
She narrowed her gaze on him as if trying to pry information out of his brain without words.
Then how do you know Tabby?
Bubba Burdett. That relaxed her instantly. She wrinkled her nose, then laughed.
I love Bubba. He's
unique?
Good word.
She leaned forward onto the counter and gave him a view down her shirt. He was sure she didn't mean to. He quickly averted his gaze to hers as heat crept over his entire face and made his ears burn.
You have the most beautiful pair of blue eyes I've ever seen. I bet girls at your school go crazy all the time over them.
And she would lose that bet. Good thing the girl didn't play poker.
Not really.
She laughed, then, to his instant relief, straightened.
You know, Nick, if I was a few years younger.
She winked at him. Feeling really awkward now and a bit scared by her cougar ways, Nick stepped back, closer to Caleb.
What the heck's going on lately?
He asked Caleb in his head.
Girls are coming on to me everywhere.
Relax, kid. It's the glamour that comes with your powers. They do that to most of us.
So that was it. Now he understood what had happened with Simi, and it made him feel a lot better.
Until he kept thinking about it. He should probably be grateful he had come-do-me powers with women, but he honestly didn't like it at all.
Well, that stinks, Kay. How will I ever know if a woman really likes me?
Easy. It'll be the woman who's immune to it. She won't come on to you. She'll tell you off.
Great. Just what he needed. Someone else criticizing him.
I think I'd rather stick with the ones who were awed by my demonic yet sweet powers of persuasion.
Caleb snorted at him.
All right, Anna said as she returned with another box full of stuff. I think...
She stopped mid-sentence as all the lights went out in the store, bathing them in utter darkness. Caleb stepped closer to Nick while Anna beelined to her niece to protect her.
Anna?
Tiana asked, reaching for her aunt's hand. Do you feel that?
I do. Caleb?
He set his basket on top of the counter and lowered his head in a way that told Nick he was listening to the ether around them.
Yeah, it's some seriously dark powers, and they are looking for someone.
Was it him? Nick knew it had to be, but he was hoping and praying that maybe someone else might be on the menu for once. Ash was in town. It was possible he could have angered something with massive grudge capabilities, right?
I swear, it feels like noir,
Anna breathed. Nick went cold at a name he seriously didn't want to hear. Noir was the ancient god who owned the Malachi, the same god his father was currently hiding from. He glanced to Caleb and pushed his thoughts to him. Nick couldn't even think Noir's name without feeding the dark god's powers, was locked down in his realm and couldn't leave.
He is. His servants aren't.
Oh, goody. That meant they could easily be here for him. And he could only imagine what kind of playmates Noir would send out to recover the missing Malachi embryo. Nick had met a couple of them already and had no interest in getting acquainted with any more. His panic rising, he swallowed hard as the sound of rustling, legs or wings or some other ominous body part echoed on the street outside. It made the hair on the back of his neck stand on end. Caleb ran to the shop's door and locked it tight. All around them, various objects in the store began to glow bright. Like Manyara's symbols in his condo, Anna had thrown protection spells up to keep her store safe from the creatures who would do her or her customers harm.
Will that hold it off?
Caleb asked Anna. Anna and her niece exchanged a concerned frown.
It should, but...
I hate butts.
A tick started in Caleb's jaw.
Now's not a good time for a butt.
Anna didn't respond verbally. Her eyes, however, grew so wide it was a wonder they remained in their sockets. Turning to see what had her so horrified, Nick stepped back as his own terror seized him. The doors and windows began to move like they were breathing, in and out, over and over, with such force that the wood whined under the strain of it. The glass began to crack. The sound went down his spine like nails against a chalkboard. Then, faster than he could react, the windows blew out, showering them with glass shards. Insane laughter echoed, and out of nowhere, a rabid herd of animals, cats, dogs, birds, insects, and such, ran past the store like a pack of baying hounds after a fox. Nick let out an elongated breath of relief. Since they weren't stopping, maybe they weren't after him after all. At least, that was his thought until one large, mangy brown dog doubled back. Covered in a white, frothing sweat, it stood before the windows on its hind legs to look in at them and growl angrily. Nick crossed himself and started praying.
Mara,
Tiana said in a breathless tone. Nick scowled at her.
Who the heck's Mara?
Not a who, Nick,
Caleb explained.
The Mara are Norse spirits who use animals to hunt down an assigned target.
What are they after?
Anna asked.
Me? It was the safest bet, but Nick didn't say that out loud. He was afraid if he did, the dog might attack.
Although, judging by the way it was eyeballing them, it was about to open business on them anyway. It had backed up on its haunches. Nick crouched low, bracing himself for the attack. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, fire burst across the opening of the store, lighting up the dark street and sending the dog and its friends running away as fast as they could. A jubilant rebel yell rang out, bringing a smile to Nick's face as he recognized the lunatic sound, and he was grateful he was too far away to smell the duck urine. An instant later, Bubba and Mark, both armed with military-grade flamethrowers, swept the street free of the Mara. In unison, they covered every inch of the pavement without setting anything on fire. That, in and of itself, was a miracle, especially for the two most accident-prone people Nick had ever had the misfortune of calling friend.
Yeah,
Mark shouted in a deep tone, shaking his fist after the dogs.
That's right, bitches. Run back to whatever hole you crawled out of and stay there.
Bubba stopped on the stoop outside of Ursulie's to look through the broken-out windows.
You all right in there?
Anna laughed at him. Depends. Are you planning to burn down my store?
Not planning to, but I wasn't planning on having to stop my zombie survival class tonight to run after some ancient Slavic demon bloodhounds either.
Anna saluted him. Touché?
Bubba,
Mark shouted from down the street. I could use a little help here. Cujo's fighting back and he's got a lot of angry friends with him. Bubba stepped backward to glance down the street where Mark had gone.
Nah, you appear to be doing all right by yourself.
I hate you, fat man.
Fat?
Bubba said indignantly.
Your head weighs more than I do, and don't get me started on your ego that has its own zip code.
He turned back toward them and saluted them with the pilot light on his flamethrower.
Y'all have a good night, and stay alive.
Just as Caleb took a step toward the raised counter, Bubba reappeared in the open windows.
Hey, Nick, you got a minute?
Unsure how wise that would be, given the weirdness of this night, he glanced at Caleb to see what he thought.
Ain't nothing gonna eat you while Bubba's around, Caleb said with a laugh. They might screw with him for fun, but he won't let him through. You go on and see what he needs while I check out. I'll be there in a few.
Nick wasn't sure he liked that idea, but he left in spite of his common sense. Carefully, so as not to get hurt, he picked his way through the glass fragments until he was outside on the sidewalk beside Bubba. Car alarms rang out up and down the street, and there was hardly a store left with its windows intact. At the sound of approaching police sirens, Mark came running down the street with the backpack portion of the flamethrower bobbing while he cradled the tube with the pilot light in his arms to protect it. Now, there's a sight you don't see every day. Unless you befriend lunatics. With lightning speed, Bubba took his flamethrower off and held it out with one arm. In a perfect handoff, Mark grabbed it as he ran past them toward the Triple B. The man didn't even slow down or miss a single step. Nick was impressed. Horrified and amused, but really impressed.
Should I ask?
Bubba wiped his hands off on his jeans.
The commissioner stopped by a couple of weeks ago and told us that if another police officer caught either me or Mark out in public with the flamethrowers again, they'd haul us in for arson and keep us there till we're too old and feeble to lift a weapon.
Ah, so what did you need?
Bubba rubbed at his neck in a gesture that always signaled he was nervous about something. A wave of fear shot through Nick. It wasn't often that anything rattled Bubba, and when it did, it was biblically bad.
Is something wrong?
No, I just...
His voice trailed off as various expressions played across his face.
Is something wrong? Nick asked.
No, I just...
His voice trailed off as various expressions played across his face. An awful feeling went through Nick.
Please let me be wrong. This night has already sucked enough.
He couldn't stand for it to get worse.
Please, God, Bubba, tell me you're not about to ask me out, are you?
Bubba made a rude sound at him.
Hell no. I'd date Mark first, provided he took a bath so I wouldn't have to fumigate my truck or store.
That was a relief.
But,
Bubba continued,
now that you mention it, that is what I wanted to ask you about.
Dating Mark? Really?
Because the kid with a brand new license was such an expert on going out with others. Bubba gave him a dry, irritated stare. Then after a few seconds, he inhaled a deep breath and rubbed his hand over his chin.
Look, I'm just gonna blurt this out, so bear with me. I wanted to ask you if you'd be opposed to me asking out your mama. I've been thinking about it for a while now, and I didn't want to go behind your back. Do it. If it bothers you at all, just tell me, and I'll never mention it again. But your mom is a fine woman, and I would never do anything to dishonor her or upset you.
For a full, solid minute, Nick couldn't breathe, as that question hit him like a kick to his groin. Had he really heard that? Was it possible?
Bubba wants to date my mother.
The mere concept threw him straight into shock. Bubba snapped his fingers in front of his face.
Nick, you all right?
No. The world was suddenly upside down, total pole reversal, and it wasn't from the demons and other things out to get him. Bubba wanted to date
His mother. Bubba. His mom.
His blessed, sainted mother, who never even looked at a man that way. She was so uptight and staunch about that that Nick had half convinced himself she'd turn into a pillar of salt if she ever contemplated talking to the opposite sex, never mind actually touching one of them. But then, Bubba never looked at women either. Not once since his wife died. Mark had told him that. Heck, Bubba didn't even talk about women. It was as if his heart was so broken by the loss of Melissa that he couldn't bear the thought of spending even a minute with another woman other than his own mama. Yet once the initial shock of the question settled and Nick had some higher cognitive functioning again, he stopped looking at it like an infant who thought he'd been born through immaculate conception. His mother was a sweet, beautiful woman who was barely 30 years old. And Bubba, while a bit on the crazy side, was a great man who wasn't that much older than her. He was also the closest thing to a father Nick had ever known. His mind whirling, he went back in time to that afternoon he'd first met Bubba. It had been a particularly bad day his first month at St. Richard's. Stone had punched him so hard during first period that his nose had still been stinging that afternoon, and his eyes hadn't stopped tearing up. Worse, he'd been given an assignment in English that required him to have a computer and internet connection. Since they couldn't afford either, Nick had spent over an hour trying to find an internet cafe or a computer store that would rent time to him when he didn't have an ID or parent with him. Most had run him off 3 seconds after he entered the building. By the time he'd stumbled into the Triple B, he'd been so frustrated he'd wanted to throw himself into the Pachy train. Bubba, in all his humongous, rippling, muscled form that made the Hulk look like a pygmy, had stood at the counter of his store, staring right at him. Back then, he'd had a thick black beard, shaggy hair, and was wearing a black glow-in-the-dark kill-em-all-and-let-God-sort-em-out tee covered by a red flannel lumberjack shirt. Frozen in terror at the sight of Bubba's stern glower and arms the size of a tree trunk, Nick had wanted to run. But he was afraid to move lest he wet his pants, and he'd been convinced that Bubba would kill him dead if he wet the floor.
"Can I help you?"
Bubba's thick drawl had rumbled out of his massive chest like low-lying thunder. It had taken a few seconds before Nick's own voice could rise above a whisper.
I need to rent a computer for homework.
That scowl had darkened before Bubba broke into one of his famous, crap-eating grins.
"You don't have to look so scared, boy. I've already filled up on snot nose at lunch and don't got no more room in my belly for another one for a while."
He'd reached under the counter and pulled out a laptop, then set it up with a chair for Nick in the front of the store.
"I don't normally rent computers, but I do have one right here you can use till you get finished with your homework. Just take your time and don't worry about the cost."
"I can't take charity. My mama won't let me."
"Fine, then. You can take out some trash in the back when you get done."
The next thing Nick had known, he was working on his paper at the counter near the register, laughing at Bubba's stories of his scary adventures with Mark, and splitting a pizza with him after Bubba had heard his stomach rumbling. By the time he had his assignment finished, with a lot of help from Bubba, he'd thought the world of the man. They didn't make many guys like Big Bubba Burdett. And his mother was a lady in a category all her own. If she were ever going to have a relationship with a man, Nick couldn't think of anyone else he'd rather have her with than Bubba.
"Dang, Bubba," Caleb said as he joined them. "What'd you do to him?" "I just asked a question, but I think I sent him into a coma or something."
"What was the question?"
Nick held his hand up to interrupt them as he finally had a rational thought again.
"You know what, Bubba?"
He met Bubba's gaze levelly.
"I'd be fine with you dating my mama.
I don't know if she'll say yes. She's never been on a date before, but if she agrees, I'm all for it. She needs someone to make her happy.
But I just have one question."
"Yeah?"
"If you two were to get married, would Mark be my irritating stepbrother or my mentally challenged uncle we don't talk about in public?"
Bubba laughed,
You better be glad he's not here to hear that, boy. He'd kick your butt.
Probably so. Seriously, though, I'm all good with it. May the force be with you when you ask her. You can never tell how she's gonna react to things like this. And don't hold it against me if she says no.
Don't worry, I won't.
Bubba inclined his head to him.
Thank you, Nick. I appreciate it. And I promise, I won't do anything to make you uncomfortable or dishonor your mama.
Then he nodded to Caleb and headed for his store at the same time the police began arriving. Nick met Caleb's gaze. It's a sign, isn't it?
What is?
Bubba wanting to date my mom.
The world is coming to an end.
Caleb laughed at his dire tone.
No, Nick, not if we can help it.
Nick wanted to believe that, but as they started back toward his house, a bad feeling went through him. A feeling that only got worse as they were passing a police car and overheard an officer talking on his radio.
What was the name of that escaped prisoner again?
Adarian Malachi, and they're pretty sure he's headed our way. He's already killed 6 people who tried to stop his escape, so he is definitely armed and dangerous. Do not attempt to apprehend him alone. We're getting information now about any family he might have in the area, and we'll pass that along once it comes in.
Nick felt the color draining from his face as he met Caleb's wide-eyed stare. While he knew he'd be the primary target his father would want to kill, there was one other person his father would prey on.
We've got to get to my mother.
Now!
Chapter 15. Caleb caught Nick's arm and pulled him to a stop.
Hang on, something's not right.
Yeah, my bastard father's escaped and—
No, he growled through clenched teeth. Listen to me, Nick. I saw your father right before I came to you. He's not in any kind of shape to fight anyone, not even a human. He didn't get out of there on his own. He couldn't have.
Wanting to kill Caleb for holding him back, Nick tried to break free of Caleb's iron grip.
Then he has a helper. What else is new?
Caleb's fingers bit harder into his arm, keeping him in place in spite of Nick's struggles to get free.
Your father has no allies, Nick. I'm it. Do you understand me? The Malachi is the king shit of our universe. All preternatural creatures, including the majority of the gods who remain in power, exist in a state of absolute fear of him, even Noir. He might have held your father's leash, but he knew he was holding his death in captivity, which is why he kept your father weakened and chained. That being said, everyone covets his power, and if they can ever get to a weakened Malachi, they can take those powers and use them.
Then why does he trust you?
I'm his slave. There's no way I can hurt him, and he knows it. So long as he lives, my powers are his to command. If I tried to use them against him, they would rebound on me, and I could conceivably lose mine entirely or die myself. I'm the only creature alive he can turn to right now who can't kill him for his powers.
Nick shook his head. I don't understand what you're saying.
I'm saying that if your father is really out of jail, something went in and got him for a reason, and if he's still alive, that creature is holding him prisoner. And whatever those reasons are that they haven't killed him, they are not for your father's benefit, and especially not yours. The Malachi is the most cursed creature ever born. They can know no love of any kind, and that includes friendship. They can't even trust their own mothers at their back.
Nick calmed a degree as he considered that, and came to the conclusion that his mother wasn't in immediate danger from his father. She should be at home, safe.
Who would have taken him then?
Caleb finally let go of his arm.
That is the right question.
Now let me really taint your cornflakes by reminding you that if something has found him, and they manage to take his powers, they alone will have the ability to kill you. That's why I said we had to get you to him immediately before something like this happened or he dies.
Wouldn't you know if they killed him?
Wouldn't they have control of you now?
Not necessarily. It could just mean they haven't summoned me yet. They may not even realize that they have a slave, but you are right about one thing. We need to secure your mom until this is over, not because of your father, but because she's your weakest link. Whoever has her has you by the stones.
Nick glanced down to Bubba's store. His first thought was to put his mom with him. Bubba would protect her with his life, he knew it. But the cops were all over the Triple B and were interrogating both him and Mark about what had happened. That left him with only one other person he could trust. Pulling his phone out, he called Kieran, who answered on the second ring.
What do you need, Cajun?
Can you meet me at my house? I just heard from the police that my dad escaped jail, and I'm afraid he might come after my mom.
Kieran didn't hesitate with his response. I'll be there in 5 minutes.
Nick hung up and slid his phone back into his pocket. He met Caleb's bemused stare that silently asked if Nick had heard a word he'd said about his father's real situation.
It's the only thing we can use that will get my mom to cooperate, he explained. Otherwise, she'd refuse to stay at Carrion's. But if she thinks my father might show up at our doorstep and hurt me...
Good thought.
Yeah, I know. Some days I'm not totally stupid.
Nick headed for home with a sick feeling in his gut. Was all of this the Harvester playing havoc with his life? Or was this something else? Someone new. Every day seemed to bring a more powerful enemy out of the ether to screw with him. It was worse than playing the ultimate level of a video game with no more spare lives and no cheat codes.
I'm too young for this crap, he said under his breath.
If it's any condolence, you handle it like a man, and better than anyone I've fought beside in a very long time.
Caleb's rare praise stunned him. Unsure what had motivated it, he frowned at his friend.
Will it ever get easier?
I could lie and say yeah, but honestly, life isn't supposed to be easy. Ever. But with the hardest challenges go the greatest rewards, and every incredible moment of my life came only after I did something that made my gut clench with fear.
Nick scoffed at his words.
You're full of more crap than a sewage plant.
Caleb laughed.
I know it feels like everything in the universe is out to get you, and in your case it's actually true, but
no offense, Caleb, pep talks are not your forte. Please stop anymore and I'll be knotting a noose around my throat.
Let me finish, jerkweed. We all have moments when we're sure the gods in power have chosen us to be their personal whipping boys. But if you take a step back, you'll see the way out. And years later, when you look at it with some perspective...
If you tell me it won't seem so bad, I swear to God, in the mood I'm in, I'm gonna punch you.
I wasn't gonna say that. There will be many an event in your life that no amount of time will ever take the sting out of. Days when you know your heart has been brutally ripped out and thoroughly stomped. But every one of those events is a defining moment in our lives that, for better or worse, changes us forever and carves a scar on our souls. They will leave us angry, bitter, shell-shocked, and bleeding. That is a guarantee from a cold, brutal universe that hates us.
Nick really didn't want to hear this, but there was no stopping Caleb when he was on a roll.
We don't have a choice in how or when our bad days will blindside us. But what we do choose is how we allow them to leave us once they're gone. You can use those moments as a catalyst to spur you on to greater things, or you can let it be the event that breaks you and leaves you shattered and forever lost in darkness. That, my friend, is the curse of free will. You can blame it all on fate and the universe, but in the end, you alone decide if you're going to lie down and let hell take you under, or if you're going to stand strong in defiance of it all with your middle finger raised.
Caleb stomped on the sidewalk to pierce him with a fiery gaze.
If you muster that courage to stand under fire and not go down, you will amass an inner strength that no one can touch. You won't be another faceless, nameless, forgotten human in a long historical line of the defeated. You will be a steeled warrior and a force to be forever reckoned with. And beneath the pain that lingers, you will have the comfort of knowing that you are strongest of all. That when others caved and broke, you kept fighting, even against hopeless odds.
Nick scoffed. And that's really supposed to make me feel better. Seriously?
No one can take your dignity or hold you down, Nick, unless you let them. I was once the most feared commander in an army of demons, and am now a slave to a creature I would rather gut than look at.
every morning when I get up and have to ready myself to face the horror of putrid human high school, condescending teachers, and hormonal teenagers so that I can protect your worthless hide, is a morning I want to paint the walls behind me with my brain matter.
Thanks, Kay, Nick said bitterly.
Way to motivate. You should think about charging admission. But...
Caleb held his finger up in front of Nick's face to silence him.
I don't pull that trigger. Because I know that even though I don't see an end to my hell right now, nothing is ever final or eternal. Not success, and definitely not failure. High school will pass, and we'll move on to the next phase. I can't guarantee you what's going to happen, or what crap the universe will decide to gut me with, but I do control whether I'm a fighter or a victim, and I will never be a victim.
Neither will I.
And that is why I fight for you, Nick, even when I have an urge to kill you.
Nick shook his head at the surliness of that last comment. You really do suck at this.
Caleb laughed. But I don't suck at everything, and we need to get you to your mother and secure her safety.
As they started forward, Nick heard a deep, low growl. He searched the darkness for the source. Is that the Mara again?
Caleb picked up the pace and pushed Nick to walk directly in front of him. No, it's something worse.
One day you need to write down the hierarchy of spooky crap for me.
Caleb didn't comment as he shoved his bag into Nick's hands. Get to your mother and send her with Kiri into his house. You don't leave that condo until I come for you, understood?
Yeah, but I don't...
Caleb pushed him with both hands.
Run!
Nick hesitated as a huge black wolf that was the size of a horse launched itself for his throat. Right before it would have bit Nick, Caleb caught it by the neck and tackled it to the ground. With glowing purple eyes, the snarling wolf sank its teeth into Caleb's arm. Caleb cursed in pain. Nick started forward to help, but Caleb's orange eyes flared in the darkness as he summoned his demon powers.
Get to safety, Nick. Damn it, boy, move.
Even though the very idea of running stuck hard in his craw, Nick turned and did what Caleb ordered, knowing that if he stayed, he'd only be a distraction that could get Caleb seriously hurt or killed. He clutched at the bag so he didn't lose anything and didn't slow down until he reached the locked iron door of their condo. As he punched in the code, he felt a stirring in the air behind him.
Please be Kirian.
He turned to see a giant black shadow closing in. Definitely not his boss. The pungent scent of sulfur choked him. It was so dense he could taste it. Get in! Get in! Why was it any time you needed to hurry, electronics slowed down to a crawl and lagged? How did they know? He finally heard the light beep, followed by the whir of the lock opening. Just as he grabbed the door handle, the blackness seized him and threw him to the side of the building. Nick hit the brick so hard, dancing lights clouded his vision. Caleb's supplies scattered everywhere, rolling across the sidewalk. The creature grabbed him by the throat, cutting his air off. His eyes widened as his gaze focused on her perfect, translucent features. Ethereal and ghostly, she floated above the ground like some graceful angel with tendrils of ribbons spiraling around her. But her stark white eyes were pitiless as she leaned in to kiss him. Only, it wasn't a kiss. The instant she placed her lips to his, he felt her pulling his breath out of his body with the force of a full-blown hurricane. Her laughter echoed in his head as his very soul was ripped from its foundations. Nick tried to fight her off, but since she had no real form, there was nothing to hit or push against, no way to stop her from suffocating him. How she was holding him down without a body made no sense, yet he couldn't escape her. He tried his best to breathe, yet no air would fill his lungs. It only left them. With no choice and growing weaker by the heartbeat, he fell to the sidewalk. Still, he fought on, crawling his way back to the stairs so that he could get inside to where Manyara had painted her symbols of protection. They would get this thing off him. They had to. After what seemed like an eternity, he reached the door again, only to discover it had relocked itself and jammed shut. There was no way he could stand up under her onslaught to reach the keypad. His head spinning, he knew he was dying.
and there was nothing he could do to stop it.
Chapter 16. We have a serious problem.
Grim opened his eyes to see Winter Laguerre in front of him while he sat on his cold throne that was made from the bones of fallen heroes. Even now he could hear their whispers as they tried to barter with him for their lives.
How he loved the sound of hopeless misery.
No matter how brave the soul, they all had a tendency to turn craven when they knew their death was imminent. When they learned firsthand that death didn't negotiate. But that wasn't what he needed to focus on.
You have nerve waking me from my slumber, War. Of all creatures, you should know better.
Because he very seldom slept, Grim was never a happy morning person. Rather, he woke up with bloodlust and rage. War, however, had no natural fear of him, since they were ancient allies, and he relied on her to feed him a steady diet of victims.
Oh, well then, she said nonchalantly, return to your sleep. It'll wait.
She started to leave. Her frigid tone told him that whatever it was urgent.
What will wait?
She tossed her long, dark hair over her shoulder. Even though it was pitch black in his study, he saw her perfectly, because nothing could ever hide from death.
You said you wanted your rest. Far be it from me to disturb you.
Grim rubbed at his eyes and squashed his natural inclination to snap at her. She was trying to pick a fight with him. It was what she lived for, and he had no intention of giving it to her.
I'm awake now. The damage is done. Tell me what brings you to my humble abode.
She cast her gaze around his massive throne room where he'd amassed some of the world's greatest treasures.
Yeah, your shack is such a dump. You should hire a maid.
He sighed irritably.
Are you really here to discuss my spring cleaning?
No. I'm here to warn you that Thorn knows someone freed his pet from his pit and is furious over it. He's already summoned his army to go after it and return Holler to his hole immediately. Grim cursed under his breath. Thorn was an aptly named pain in his nether region. Much like the Dark Hunters Grim loathed, Thorn helped the humans by leading a group called Hell Chasers, damned souls Thorn had bargained for so that they could earn their redemption by returning the worst preternatural escapees to whatever hell or prison realm they'd escaped from. He was an even bigger bleeding heart than Asheron. But what stung the most was that Thorn had once been Grim's biggest ally. Until that day, during the greatest plague of all time, the beast had turned against Grim and snatched Holler from his side, then imprisoned Holler in Thorn's dungeon and dared Grim to release him. They'd been at war with each other ever since. He glared at War.
How did he find out?
Do I look like a crystal ball?
Oh, to relive the past, when he'd been able to take an axe to her for that kind of snark.
Such fond memories he had, but they were worthless right now when he had to deal with her and her quirks.
Then how do you know he knows we freed Holler? He asked, letting the full weight of his agitation taint his tone.
She stepped aside to show him the shimmery ghost form that had been hiding behind her back. Zarelda swallowed in fear as she faced him.
Holler cast me out of the girl's body tonight, and I can no longer get into it.
Really? Did he have to do everything for them?
Sacrifice another victim and return.
I tried.
And?
I was stopped by a huge male hell chaser who then interrogated me for Holler's whereabouts. He marked me with some kind of device, and now I'm non-corporeal no matter what I try.
But wait, War said, her eyes gleaming with perverse pleasure. It gets better. After your little chit-chat with Hell about freeing Zarelda's brother from her custody in exchange for Holler's slavery, our favorite Norse death goddess got curious, went digging, and found out you were after the Malachi. Since she doesn't trust you, Grim, she has called out her Mara and Hellhounds to fetch him to Helheim.
Zarelda sucked her breath in sharply at the mention of the Hellhounds.
Is Zavid among them?
War shrugged. Again, I am not a crystal ball, and I really couldn't care less about your brother.
Then how do you know so much?
Zerelda snapped.
Grim leaned back with a slight smile, waiting for War to tear the stupid little chit apart.
To his great disappointment, she didn't. Her voice was almost kind when she answered,
I unleashed one of my harvesters on the junior Malachi, hoping to help you season him up for his conversion. My agent has been watching and terrorizing him ever since, and she happens to know a hellhound and Mara when she sees one. She was just about to move in when they tore past her.
Grim closed his eyes and hissed in anger as he sorted through this latest development. His plan had been flawless. Borrow Holler from Thorn to weaken Adarian, while Zerelda strengthened Nick and tied his heart to her. Once Adarian was dead and Nick was firmly in their camp, he'd planned to trick the goddess Hel into releasing Zavid to make Zerelda happy and keep her around to pacify the younger Malachi so that Nick didn't turn on them. Not to mention the bonus round of having Zavid kill Caleb for them. The Norse god, Holler, was only a nugget to get Zavid free. After that, Grim would have gladly returned Holler to Thorn's dungeon and then dealt with Hel's wrath over his little lie. Since she wasn't nearly as powerful as Thorn, he hadn't been concerned about duping her at all. Now? Disaster. Damn Hel for being smart enough to know he was lying to her. War met his glower without flinching.
So, genius, what's your plan now?
Where's your harvester?
On standby, awaiting orders.
Grim stood up and descended his dais. Then, by all means, let's unleash her.
Chapter 17. Caleb slowed as he neared Nick's condo and saw his supplies scattered all over the ground in front of it.
What the?
Closing his eyes, he reached out with his powers to contact Nick.
No one answered.
His heart pounding, he punched the code into the door at the same time Kyrian pulled up to the curb in his black Lamborghini and got out. Caleb held the door open until Kyrian joined him on the stoop. The ancient Greek general scowled as he came close enough to see the blood, bruises, and scratches the hellhound had given Caleb as a memento of their lovely time together.
And what happened to you?
Dogfight, Caleb snorted. New Orleans definitely needs stricter leash laws.
Kyrian didn't respond to that.
Is Nick inside?
Caleb glanced back at the mess that littered the ground and squelched the fear that gripped him.
I hope so.
Trying not to panic prematurely, he led the way in and then upstairs to the condo. Knocking on the door, he waited, but no one answered.
Come on, give me a break. Let the kid just be his usual slow-to-react self.
Kyrian pushed him aside.
Nick,
he called, banging on the door himself.
Charisse.
Still, no answer. Of course not, because that would just make his crappy life a hair better, gods forbid. Grimacing as his own panic and concern rose, Kyrian pulled the keys out of his pocket and unlocked the door. The minute they stepped inside, all doubts that something had happened dissipated. Caleb cursed. A major fight had gone down here. Pictures were knocked off the walls, the side table was upturned, and the lamp that normally rested on it was shattered. But even worse was the blood on the floor. And on the ceiling.
No.
They were too late. Kyrian quickly searched the rooms, but Caleb knew that there weren't any bodies here. Whatever had nabbed them had taken them out of the human realm. There was absolutely no sign of Nick on this earth. Had there been, he would have felt it and been able to locate him. The same was true of Adarian. Caleb couldn't find him either. Kyrian came back to the living room with a fierce growl.
Call the cops. I'm going to look for them.
A lot of good that'll do. But he was happy to have Kyrian occupied with a wild goose chase. The Greek general had no idea that Caleb was anything other than a normal teen boy, and he wanted to keep it that way. He'd never been real chatty about himself anyway, and the fewer creatures who knew who and what he was, the easier he breathed, and the longer he lived.
Enemies kill, friends betray.
He not only believed that, he had the words tattooed across his back beneath his demon's mark.
Call me if you find anything. Caleb said.
As soon as he was sure Kyrian had left, he rushed outside to gather up the ingredients for his binding spell. If Nick and his mother were still alive, it was even more important now that they get Adarian's powers into Nick.
Don't be dead.
The pain that thought caused him was not something he wanted to examine.
I don't care about him. It's my own butt that concerns me.
Over and over, he tried to convince himself that the only reason it mattered was because he didn't want to be enslaved to an unknown dickhead. Yeah, that was it. Otherwise, he wouldn't care at all. But deep inside, a place he didn't want to admit to, he knew he was lying. Caleb found the last dropped container buried in a crevice by the next house. Now he could start the spell. Rising, he sighed as he scanned the dark street.
Where are you, Nick?
What had happened to him? He had no way of knowing, but he knew someone who could find out, fast, if she'd speak to him. Caleb would probably have to do some serious begging to get her back on their side.
I hate swallowing my pride.
But sometimes it was a necessary evil, and this was definitely one of those times. Hoping he could pull off a miracle, he flashed himself from Nick's condo on Bourbon over to Cody's home on Burgundy Street. He had no idea if she'd be there or if she'd even open the door. It didn't matter. He had to try. That being said, he was unprepared for what awaited him when he appeared on the sidewalk outside of her building. Unlike Nick, he'd never been here before. He'd had no reason to visit. He only knew the address because he'd added it to his phone in case of an emergency. Of course, he never thought the emergency would be this. Nor did he think he'd want to kill Cody the way he did right now as he rolled his eyes at her salmon-colored house with dark green panels that was a long cottage style similar to quite a few others in town.
Really, Cody? Come on. You've got to be kidding me.
The problem? Because of past tax laws, many of the homes in New Orleans were narrow in front and long down the back. They were termed shotguns because you could literally open the front door and shoot a straight line through them to the back door without hitting a wall. The other big historical tax had been on front windows, so the crafty citizens who refused to be taxed on something so ridiculous had decided to put doors